This is a Federal News Network podcast.
AmeriCorps is the government's premier agency for engaging volunteers of all ages to help with the nation's pressing problems. At the end of last year, it got an energetic new CEO when the Senate confirmed Michael Smith, who joins me now. Mr. Smith, good to have you with us.
Good to be here, Tom. Thank you.
And before we get into your background, which is pretty interesting, I wanted to talk about AmeriCorps itself. Give us a sense of the numbers of volunteers, the age distribution. What does it look like these days, the core of the AmeriCorps volunteers?
Absolutely. AmeriCorps is the federal agency for volunteering and service. We were founded in 1993, so we're about to turn 30 years old. But many of our programs, like VISTA, Volunteers in Service to America, go all the way back to the 1960s. Today, we have more than 250,000 AmeriCorps members and senior volunteers serving in 40,000 locations all across the country. So chances are, if there's a challenge and there are people working to do something about it, AmeriCorps members are at the heart of that.
And what are some of the major challenges? I imagine housing, environmental issues, and so on. I mean, these are both urban and suburban and rural, correct?
Absolutely. The wonderful thing about AmeriCorps is we have the ability to pivot on a dime. So we're deep in 40,000 communities. We're working on issues like education and housing and hunger and climate. But, you know, when the going got tough in these past couple of years with the pandemic, America and AmeriCorps got tougher. So we have AmeriCorps members that have been working alongside doctors in hospitals, helping with testing and vaccination. We have AmeriCorps members that have been working in food banks and food pantries, helping with food distribution. We have almost 70,000 AmeriCorps members that are working in the schools. So when teachers had to figure out what to do with virtual, AmeriCorps members were right there alongside them and still are, helping to keep kids in school and on track.
Got it. And what does it take to be a volunteer? Do you get a lot of applications every year?
Well, Martin Luther King said it best. Anybody can be great because anybody can serve. You know, you don't have to have a special degree. You don't have to go through a long course. You just have to have a desire to want to give back to your community. And we have AmeriCorps members that are 18 to 80. I actually met with an AmeriCorps seniors member who was in their 90s a couple weeks ago. So if you care about public education, you can work in the schools. If you don't want to be around other people and you just want to work in our parks and help with trails, you can do that too. You know, right here in Washington, we've got folks at Washington Parks and People. We've got folks that are working with the Washington AIDS Partnership. So chances are, if you have a passion, there's an opportunity to use the power of service to do something about it.
And what does it take to become a volunteer? There's a process here.
So there's all sorts of different ways to volunteer. If you want to become an AmeriCorps member, all you have to do is go to AmeriCorps.gov, and we have something called a Fit Finder. So you have to decide, do you want to be a full-time volunteer? So we have AmeriCorps members that are volunteering for 1,700 hours a year in school. We also have some AmeriCorps members that are just doing that part-time. So we will help you find your fit, both on the hours that you want to give, the compensation that you may or may not need, and the issue area that you care about.
So volunteers do get some remuneration, not really a salary, but get some costs covered, say for commuting or travel to a national park, that kind of thing?
Yeah, we consider AmeriCorps members to be force multipliers. So after a disaster, for instance, you might have an AmeriCorps member that's managing hundreds of day-by-day volunteers. So AmeriCorps members that are full-time or sometimes part-time get a very small stipend. We also get an Eli Segal Education Award to help you pay your school debt down if you're an AmeriCorps member.
And given the range of programs you mentioned, there's 40,000 communities you're working in, 250,000 people. What's the process by which the Corps, the leadership, decides this is something we can send volunteers to support? And how do you work with the external groups that you are supporting?
You know, the wonderful thing about AmeriCorps is we are deeply local. We actually work through a network of state commissions. So most governors appoint a head of service for their state, and our state commissions help to decide what the local issues are. And we think about some of the things that are the most pressing issues in Washington. So for instance, we were really proud just a couple months back to launch Public Health AmeriCorps, a $400 million partnership with the Centers for Disease Control, where we are helping use AmeriCorps members to meet immediate public health needs, but also building the next generation of public health workers. So, you know, you might have AmeriCorps members that are working on an issue that only matters in this specific issue in West Virginia, but we also might decide, we've heard bubbling up, there's this great need around climate, or there's this great need around public health. And so we'll direct dollars that way on a national level.
We're speaking with Michael Smith. He is the CEO of AmeriCorps. And let's talk about you for a minute. You have come from service in the Obama administration, but I think equally significantly, you were the head of a group called My Brother's Keeper. I guess that was also backed by the Obamas. Tell us about that experience and how it helps you in this job.
You know, I think the most important thing to know about me is I am a kid from the communities that we are trying to serve. I grew up with teen parents in a single mother household in Western Massachusetts without a whole lot of money. And the reason that I am here is because of a network of volunteers and community change makers who believed that their neighbors' children were their children. And so I just was lucky to be able to create a career that was about giving back to the kind of communities that I came from. Yep. So most recently, I worked for President Obama for about 8 years, both in the White House and his foundation, leading his My Brother's Keeper initiative and his opportunity youth programs. But I actually also worked at this agency. I ran something called the Social Innovation Fund, which was about building up evidence-based approaches that are working in low-income communities.
Got it. And the My Brother's Keeper initiative, I want to return to that a minute, is concerned with Black youth and their development. It sounds like a model that can be replicated across many different communities where people need help.
Yes, President Obama launched My Brother's Keeper after the tragic killing of Trayvon Martin. And the idea was, how do we make sure that there are pathways to opportunity for boys and young men of color, and that they know and they realize that they matter? So all across the country, there are hundreds of My Brother's Keeper communities that are working on making sure that young people can achieve their dreams and removing those barriers and providing mentors and changing policy so that those barriers are reduced for boys and young men of color all across the country.
And let me ask you this. In AmeriCorps, of course, like all federal programs, they are blind to people's color, their background, whatever they might bring to it. In this type of situation, mentoring, helping repair communities, helping with education, can Black people mentor white children, or white adults mentor Black children? I mean, can this cross bounds that we commonly tend to draw amongst ourselves, such that integration in the best sense of the word can occur?
You know, AmeriCorps is a beautiful melting pot of community members helping each other. So you have many AmeriCorps programs that are specific, focused on one community, and you have people from that community that are helping people from that community. But you also have programs, some of which you might have heard of, Teach for America and City Year and Public Allies, where people decide, I want to move to another part of the country. And you have a rural farmer that's working side by side with an inner city single mom. And I really think that's where you see the power of national service, helping people to see their humanity and bringing people together. It is a beautiful, beautiful privilege to watch that all over the country.
And what do you plan for AmeriCorps? You've been CEO now about 6 months, and who knows, maybe there could be another 7.5 years or 6.5 years.
Well, and my watch on at AmeriCorps, I want to do a few things. One, I want to make sure that we're leading with impact. So we're not just 1,000 flowers blooming, but we look back 20 years from now and say, this is how we made an impact on our most pressing issues, not only on the challenges that our communities are facing, but the AmeriCorps members themselves. I think about, we just celebrated our 10-year anniversary with FEMA Corps, where they get to decide where AmeriCorps teams go to meet the disaster of the moment. FEMA Corps just offered our last graduating class, 70% of them got job offers. So I want to make sure more of AmeriCorps is not only a one-time service experience, but helping to change your pathway. I also want to make sure that AmeriCorps reflects the diversity of our country, the rich diversity in our AmeriCorps members and also our AmeriCorps grantees. And lastly, I want to make sure that AmeriCorps is doing more to bring people together. As I mentioned, we see it, but I think there's even more that we can do to ramp it up so that people are working side by side together with people that they might not be seeing online because we're living in these crazy echo chambers nowadays. And I think service, rolling up your sleeves with your neighbors and with people from across the country can do just that.
Yeah, there is that reality aspect to it. If you're helping someone learn to read, or if you're fixing a trail, as you mentioned, or working to make sure people get lined up properly to get the vaccine into their arms, there is a physical reality to that that transcends what you can do online pretty much.
Absolutely. You know, all this mishigas that we care about online, it goes away when you are facing a disaster, when you are facing a challenge, when you just realize you have to get the work done. We still have people that are working in response to Hurricane Ida. We still have people that are making sure those that still haven't got vaccines got vaccines. And when you are doing that work, you just want to make sure that you're working with your neighbor to get the job done.
Michael Smith is the CEO of AmeriCorps. Thanks so much for joining me.
Thank you for having me, Tom.
We'll post this interview at federalnewsnetwork.com/Federal Drive. Subscribe to the Federal Drive at Podcast One or wherever you get your shows.
Hello, I'm WIPA CEO Shane Canfield, and thank you for joining us on another episode of Lessons in Leadership. I'm honored to be joined by Angie Bailey, founder and CEO of Ananda Life. Angie has a remarkable career in public service, beginning as a GS-2 clerk typist with the Social Security Administration. And over the next 40 years, Angie steadily worked her way up through the government, ultimately becoming the Chief Human Capital Officer at the Department of Homeland Security. She's been recognized with presidential rank awards by two administrations for leadership, innovation, dedication, and commitment to the country. Angie, thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Shane. What a pleasure to be here.
Angie, you've made quite a name for yourself as a leader in the federal workforce. Who was the first person you remember looking up to as a leader, and what about them inspired you?
You know, I often think about this because, you know, sometimes we think of the people that we look up to the most as being somebody that throughout our career has, you know, been at the highest levels and all. But, I've got to go back to honestly whenever I was 10 years old. And I remember I really wanted to play Little League baseball on a boys' team. I was the only girl. And interestingly, it was the women who would keep saying to me that, no, I couldn't play. And then one day, whenever I was there to sign up yet again, there was this guy, his name was Delbert Beiser. And I remember he had like red hair and he had a wad of tobacco in his mouth and greasy overalls and everything. And he said, you know, I'll take her on my team. And, you know, just looking back on that, there are so many leadership lessons and things that I just really admire about him. And actually, I thought about throughout my entire career. He took a chance on somebody he didn't know. He put aside whatever conscious or unconscious biases that he might have had about having a girl on a team. He treated me the same. Whether, you know, if I wasn't performing, I got benched just like the boys. I got no special treatment. And he was just really honest with me and he just included me in everything. And so looking back on it, you know, really, it was Delbert Beiser, our local mechanic in our little small village, that was, I think, my inspiration for going on to, I hope, become the leader, that I wanted to be.
I'd say half of the guests on this podcast have had similar stories where they reach back to either childhood or young adulthood. And I think as leaders, it's really incumbent upon us to keep that in mind, that what we say and do, especially in the younger ages, really can have a lifelong impact. How would you describe your leadership style and how's that developed over time?
I would say that the one word that describes my leadership style is that I care. I guess that's more than one word, but I care. I've always cared about the mission. I've always cared about the people. I've always cared, you know, about making sure that they had what they needed or that they were developing the way, that they aspired to develop. And I tried to take this approach of not treating people the way I wanted to be treated, but instead treat people the way they want to be treated. And I think that really kind of developed over my career. You know, I started out just like most leaders do, where it's very results driven. It's all about the bottom line. You need to make sure that you get everything accomplished because, you know, that's what everybody's looking for, the goals, the metrics, et cetera. But I think as you mature and you go along, you start to your point, you draw back on those early childhood days or early adult, young, you know, whenever you're a young adult and you say, you know, I think that there's a little bit more to this than just the bottom line. And so over time, I really began to, I think, see a much bigger picture and the entire ecosystem, if you will, and how the people themselves fit into all of this. And that ultimately, at the end of the day, it was all about the people. And so, I think my maturity allowed me to then shift and focus more on the people than so much on results and bottom line.
You've been recognized with two presidential rank awards, two different administrations. You founded your own company. Tell us a little bit more about your background from the beginning and how did that lead you to where you are today?
Well, you know, it's kind of interesting, like you said, that I started out as a GS-2 Social Security Administration. I mean, what I really wanted to be was a criminal prosecuting attorney. That was absolutely my dream. I sometimes joke and say what I really wanted to be was a mafia don, but that wasn't going to work out. So, you know, had to be a criminal prosecuting attorney. But, you know, I had to get a job to pay for college. It wasn't in the cards that I was going to be able to go to college without a job. So I applied at the Social Security Administration, at the unemployment office, And lo and behold, I got a job at Social Security. I didn't even know it was federal, to be honest. From there, I went to the Department of Defense and I found this career field called labor and employee relations. And honestly, it was as close as I was going to get to being a criminal prosecuting attorney. I didn't go on to be a criminal prosecuting attorney, but I went on courtesy of Department of Defense to get both my bachelor's and my master's in leadership, because the whole study of leadership, I just find incredibly fascinating. You know, from historical to current times, it's just something that's just really fascinated me. And so I would say I'm a lifelong learner of leadership. And then I would say some of the other things that got me maybe where I am today is I never really said no to anything. If people asked me to take on a new challenge, even if I wasn't sure I was going to be successful at it, I would say, you know what, not sure this is going to work out, but more than happy to give it a try. And it always worked out. But I think giving things a try and just not saying no to opportunities is what really led from one position to the next. I feel like I was always rewarded for just stepping in or stepping up and taking on the challenges that sometimes no one else wanted to do.
Angie, thanks so much for joining us today.
Oh, thank you, Shane. It's such a pleasure. I really appreciate you giving me this opportunity. Thank you.
This has been the Lessons in Leadership podcast. I'm CEO of WEPA, Shane Canfield. Looking forward to talking to you next time.
This episode is brought to you by Zelle. Whenever you're sending money through an app or online, it's important to do it safely. Here are a few helpful tips. First, always make sure you know and trust the person you are sending money to. Second, confirm you have entered their contact details correctly. And finally, if you don't trust the person or your recipient is rushing you to send money right away, think twice before sending money through an app or online.
Grab a 30-day free trial of Live by Live Plus, and you'll get unlimited skips, commercial-free music, and all of the podcasts and live streaming events you can handle. Visit livexlive.com/podcast1 to learn more and start your free trial.